You are listening to a Side Streets production.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Hey, let's go to town. Hey, maybe I'll show you around. Hey, let's go to town on the weekend. All the best of summer Side Street. Might be hot, but it's a dry heat,
Hello and welcome to the Side Streets Podcast, episode number 031. Today, we are going to talk about sports, because there are two things the internet does not have enough of right now. The first is white guys with podcasts, and the second is a place to talk about sports. Now, I am primarily a basketball fan. Basketball is the greatest sport ever invented in the history of the world, and I'm not going to argue about it. Don't tweet at me trying to convince me that some other sport is better, because you're wrong. Basketball's the best. And our guest today, Greg Gethard, is a fellow basketball obsessive like myself. Greg and I talk about high school hoops, college hoops, professional basketball, our own experiences playing the game, and getting our butts handed to us while better, more athletic players were dunking in our faces. Because even though we love the sport, we're not particularly athletic guys. We still love it though. That's what's the crazy part. Because the happiest I am are those couple times a week that I get to go shoot hoops by myself. I'll put on the best show on WFMU on my headphones, and I'll pray that nobody else shows up so I can just shoot by myself in peace. Because it is so relaxing, and the rhythm of the dribbling, and the every once in a while when I actually make a shot, it's just a really satisfying thing to do. Basketball's been in my blood since I was a little kid. I've been a diehard NBA fan since about the age of 10 or 11. And each year that basketball season rolls around, my mood gets noticeably better. So, what we're going to talk about this week is the hold that sports can have over a community, the way that it can make a whole town's mood fluctuate, and the way that sports seeps under your skin as a little kid and becomes part of your personality into your 20s and 30s. And as you grow up and as you have your own kids, and just the rhythm that sports fandom can have. It's not always a good or a bad thing, but it's a constant. It always exists if you grew up around it. Here in Tucson, Arizona, this is a basketball town. These people are serious about the Arizona Wildcats basketball team. When the team is good, everyone's happy. When the team is lousy, they don't know what to do because the team is so rarely lousy. The team is almost always in the top 25. They're almost always competing for national championships, and it has seeped into the fabric of Tucson. The Wildcat basketball team is synonymous with the mood of the town. And at the end of today's episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about my plan to infiltrate this institution. I've got a whole thing put together, I've already made my submission, and we're going to discuss it after our interview with Greg Gethard. Now, there are a few ways you might know Greg. Greg used to host a podcast of his own called The Holding Court Podcast that was all about the NBA. In fact, that's still his Twitter handle, @HoldingCourtPod. He's also a freelance journalist. He's done some writing for The Classical, among dozens of other publications. He gained a lot of internet notoriety a few weeks ago through a series of Yelp reviews written as Carl G, this first-person account of somebody's marriage falling apart through a variety of Philadelphia-based restaurant reviews on the popular website Yelp. If you haven't checked that out, all you have to do is Google Yelp Gethard Carl with a K, and you'll read the whole saga. His brother Chris is a famous stand-up comedian and cable access television show host, as well as one of the funniest dudes I've ever seen. And Greg was a frequent caller into the best show on WFMU. His alter ego, The Gregulator, was a prominent fixture in the last couple years of the best show's run. So here's our conversation with Greg, and our first topic is one of significant importance. Greg Gethard, the first thing I'm going to ask you, we're going to get the hard stuff right out of the way first.
Let's do it.
What is your favorite JD and the Straight Shot song?
Oh, give me one second. What's the name? He has Okay, so he has a new album. Should we explain who JD in the Straight Shot is real quick?
Yeah, please do.
All right. So JD stands for James Dolan, and he is the owner of the New York Knicks basketball team. He's like owns Cablevision, that owns the Madison Square Garden, and owns the Knicks. And he is truly one of the worst human beings of all time.
A multi-billionaire.
Multi-billionaire. And he owns the Knicks. The Knicks have been terrible under his reign. They're just absolutely brutal.
And not just terrible, like a laughing stock.
Yeah, and annoying. They're just like, I mean, everything bad about the team. Like, they're not just like a bad basketball team. You know, like, I mean, because basketball ebbs and flows. You know, like the Lakers are a bad team right now.
Right.
Because they got old, right?
Mismanaged the cap. Yeah, things happened.
Yeah, things happened. The Knicks are just bad, and they're annoyingly bad. And, like, there's just always dumb controversies coming from the team.
It's a toxic situation.
A toxic situation. So, so my favorite, so he fancies himself a blues man as well. Like a blues magician. And he also just released a new album, or new set of songs that are like these folk songs. They're more like a Bob Dylan kind of thing. And he sings a song about like how much he hates New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. And he gives a little, it's awesome. Like he sings songs pro millionaire songs.
Yeah, it's like if Woody Guthrie wasn't you take Woody Guthrie or Pete Seeger, but they're not singing about things that matter to James Dolan. It's if instead of singing about the working class, they're singing about the estate tax.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of in one part of me, a huge part of me really like appreciates it because like rich people have every right to express themselves through music as we do, you know, and there's plenty of musicians out there who are incredibly wealthy people who still sing songs about the working class man. I'm like, right. Well, you're not the working class man anymore. You know, thank you for singing songs about that, but you live in like a gated mansion. You know?
Yeah, the Bruce Springsteen paradox.
Yeah, exactly. So, but his music, I mean, it's so funny because his band, he's gotten these like studio musicians, all these studio musicians who have like legitimate credits to their name. Like they played for like bands you've heard of. Like, I mean, not anything I would ever listen to in a million billion years, but professional session musicians. And I think like one of his albums was produced by Joe Walsh from the Eagles.
Of course it was.
Which is, they're like the worst, like arguably the worst band of all time.
But it's a perfect pairing. They make total sense together.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with my favorite James Dolan song, Voodoo Stew.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I know the one you're talking about.
And the lyrics in it are like completely like the most ridiculous thing ever. And let me see if I can get them up for you real quick. Because I was listening to this the other day, and I was like, this is disgusting.
It's like that Hard Rock Casino idea of rock and roll.
Yeah. All right. So I have some of the lyrics, if I can read them.
Oh, please do.
They're clean. I know you want a clean podcast.
Well, it's going to get dirty-ish when we're talking about James Dolan. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is going to get down. So it begins with, you ready to move your feet, which I love. And then he believes shape don't hear, changes and wipes the cheater's alibi as she whisper in a voodoo stew tried to get to you, voodoo stew what I want you to. Little, and then I think these lyrics are wrong. I'm reading from sing365.com, which I mean, they seem like it seems like these lyrics were, written in English and Google Translate and put into Spanish and then back into English.
I'm going to say that's what these are because it sounds like a billionaire read an Elmore Leonard novel, got hit in the head and decided to write music.
Yeah. But the chorus is really all you need to know. Voodoo stew to get next to you. Voodoo stew, try to get to you. Voodoo stew, do what I want you to.
And this man runs ostensibly an asset that is as valuable as anything in America.
Well, I was an employee of his briefly.
Awesome.
Not just for, I actually worked for Madison Square Garden for as a freelance writer for like about a year. And I wrote for the New York Knicks website for freelance for a couple articles. Mm-hmm. And I sat next to the Knicks for Obama's inauguration.
Oh, wow.
His first term. I sat between Dan D'Antoni and Mike D'Antoni's brother,
right,
and Al Harrington.
That's amazing.
Yes. Yes. It was a surreal moment. It was very strange. It was an enjoyable day. The original idea for the story that I was going to do was that was the year Nate Robinson won the dunk contest.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I was going to sit in a chair and he was going to dunk over me.
Amazing.
And I was going to write down what that experience was like. But the team or someone said he couldn't do that because they're afraid he could get hurt.
Liability, yeah.
Yeah, understandable. But yeah, that would have been. So I talked to Nate. I interviewed Nate Robinson that day. And it was really, really funny because that dude is short.
Like, yes.
And he's really, really short. I'm 5'11". Mm-hmm. And I had like a whole head over him.
Yeah, but, I know. He played in the Pac-12 back in the day, so, the Pac-10. So he was at the he played for the University of Washington. Yeah. And I ran into him a couple of times, and he is shorter than you think.
Yeah, yeah. So he, I was asking him about like dunking, like his history of dunking. And, you know, he was telling me, you know, he just flat out said, like, you know, God gave me incredible athletic talents. I'm like, yes. Yep, he did. Because he was like all-state football.
Oh, he played like, he was a cornerback on the football team and a kick returner. He could have played in the pros.
Yeah. But then what was really funny is like, do you have any last second advice for dunking to people, kids out, aspiring dunkers out there? And he's like, if you just put your mind to it, you can do it. I wanted to say to him, believe me, I have put my mind to dunking my whole life. My entire life I've spent wanting to dunk a basketball. I will never be able to dunk a basketball. Like an official rim, I will not be able to. So
I've had this conversation internally with myself. How many years off the end of my life I would give to be able to just dunk for an hour?
Yeah, just once. Just one time.
Just to be like at an open gym, just wowing people with Vince Carter style 360 windmills. Just to be able to do that for an hour, I would sacrifice the last 6 years of my life.
I would just like do anything just for a finger roll, like
the George Gervin style over the front of the rim move.
Yeah. But no, you know, like, you know, in gym class when you have like the really tall kind of good athlete who can kind of dunk.
They can run up and hit the front of the rim and let go of the ball kind of at the same time.
Yes, that kid. Like, and he has to take like 800 steps to do it.
A one full hand, head of steam.
Full head of steam. And he's like the 6'5" kid, the 1 6'5" kid in your high school. So, Nick, so real quick, like I want to be able just to do that dunk. But real quick about Pac-10 hoops.
Yes.
Because I'm as big a college basketball fan as an NBA fan.
Uh-huh.
And for a long time, I was a bigger college fan than NBA fan. Can I bring up a Pac-10 player and my personal interaction with him?
Oh, please do. Can't wait.
Do you remember Brevin Knight?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Stanford U. Yep.
Stanford Cardinal, point guard, All-American. So he is from, I don't know if he's from my hometown or a town near me in West Orange, New Jersey.
Okay.
I went to West Orange High School, the public high school, and he went to Seton Hall Prep. Mm. Which is a Catholic high school in our town, and they're usually really awesome at basketball. Like they've won the state title a bunch of times, sure. Been in the finals. Yeah, and New Jersey high school basketball is no joke. Like,
no, I mean, they play for real.
Yeah, they're like St. Anthony's and St. Patrick's and like all these like really, really awesome teams.
Division one kids coming out of there all the time.
All the time. And Seton Hall always puts like D1 kids. Like, you know, they always Brevin Knight is the best. I think he's probably been the best one. He had a lengthy NBA career. So
he was like a solid like third guard.
Yeah, yeah, perfectly serviceable like backup point guard.
Right.
So he he was awesome at Stanford. I mean, All-American. Like, I mean, he was great.
Yeah.
So I played you know, I played basketball a ton. We had a playground in my, it was actually a parking lot in the Catholic grammar school in my neighborhood that we had hoops set up. And I mean, all we did was play. Like, that my whole childhood was spent playing basketball down there. One time we were playing, you know, and you know, like, I'm a total scrub. Like, this is my consummate athlete. Like, my favorite athletic story with me is, and this like encapsulates so much of my life, is like, obviously, like, gigantic sports fan. You know, like, I've been a sports fan since birth.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, like, I was like reading like as early as I could read. The first thing I was reading was like the sports page.
Totally,
like,
the same. Yeah, right there with you.
Exactly. You know, so I like first or second grade, you know, like they have like things like they had in my grammar school, like special art, which was where kids were like artistically inclined.
Yes.
And special music for kids who are like gifted musicians. And then they had special gym.
Sure.
And I got called for special gym. So I'm thinking, like, you know, like, am I like awesome at sports or something?
This is going to happen for me.
Yeah. And then I'm just thinking, like, cause like, and then even like, I even still remember, like, in the back of my brain, even then, like, no, something's weird with this because I'm not good at sports. Like, as much as I want to pretend to be, I'm good at sports, I'm clearly not.
Cause,
like,
you see what good at sports is.
Yeah. Yeah. I know better than anyone in my age group here, what is good at sports. And I am not that. So they call me to special gym, and what I have to do for special gym is they say, like, you're going to play tennis. And what tennis is, it's balloon tennis, where I have to hit a balloon with a tennis racket.
Okay.
And the kids I was playing with were the mentally challenged kids in the school. Mm-hmm. So it's like me and like the slow kids playing balloon tennis. So that's the level caliber of athlete I am.
Okay.
And so I was playing basketball, and you know, like, you know, it's like we play in full court 5-on-5. So, you know, it's like always like, you know, like you call winners. You assemble a team, you call winners. So my team, we're playing, some kids come up, and it's one of them is Brevin Knight, because he was a year behind me in high school. And he was already like a legend. You know, he was already like all state and everything.
Yeah. Whenever a kid makes it to the NBA, you can tell early on, this kid's the real deal.
Yeah. And he knew a couple of the kids I played basketball with from high school, and they played on the St. Hall team. Mm-hmm. So, and he was with like a couple other, like, I don't know if they were named players that they went on or played or whatever, but these guys were like, you know, it's like, you know, me and my friends, like, I mean, not to be getting to like that whole racial stereotype thing, you know, but we were all like white kids, you know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And it's like, here's like Brevin Knight and like these like 6'4", 6'5", like black kids, you know? And I'm like, oh my God. Right. Like, I'm like starstruck.
Yes.
So they call winners. My team wins. So I'm on a court with future NBA player Brevin Knight.
And right? How'd that go for you?
Well, this is how it went. My team, we go down the court, you know, and we shoot a shot. It goes in or misses or whatever. Right. And I'm backing up. I'm at half court, and Brevin Knight gets control of the ball, you know, as a point guard.
Yep.
And I get down in a defensive stance, like I'm about to pick up Brevin Knight.
Yes.
Brevin Knight, like, looks at me and like shakes his head and laughs. And he's just, I mean, I don't even have to blink my eye, and he's 8 steps past me. Like, he's at the free throw line, like, in the blink of an eye.
Like, shot out of a cannon by you.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. And he throws up, like, a lob pass to a 6'5", 6'6" kid who dunks it. Like, who, like, reverse alley-oop dunked.
Right.
And like, as good as the kids I played with were, right, like, we couldn't do that.
Right.
Like, I didn't know anyone who could dunk.
You can only see that on TV.
Yeah, yeah. So I just raised my hand, and it was like, my knee's really bothering me. Someone's got to get me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, I just don't deserve, like, I do not belong on this court.
You're so wounded, you have to figure out what hurts the most to say, I got to get out of here.
Yeah. The only reason I'm on this court is just dumb luck.
Yeah.
Like, I managed to get on a winning team. I contributed nothing to that winning team. It's just pure luck. And now, Nick, as a U of A fan, or you're a fan, right? You would say.
I live here. You know, I didn't go to school here. I went to school at the University of Wyoming. And so now I live here, and I prefer when the Wildcats win. It makes the town happy. It's a good vibe in the town.
Gotcha.
The basketball team is what we do here.
Well, your U of Wyoming Cowboys produced one of my favorite NBA players.
Are you talking Theo Ratliff?
Theo Ratliff.
Yeah, that dude could play.
He got on the Sixers when I was living here. Mm-hmm. And he literally turned that team around. Like
that was the year he made the All-Star team, wasn't it?
Yeah, he made the All-Star team, and this cornball friend of mine thought this was a good idea. So remember in the 80s, when Kurt Rambis was on the Lakers, they had Rambis Youth.
Oh yeah,
this like mockery kind of ironic fan club.
All the kids with the tape glasses, looking kind of goofy.
He decided to start Ratliff Youth. And he made these t-shirts and bumper stickers that he all wanted us to wear and put on our cars that said Ratliff Youth. I'm like, oh, TJ, I'm just going to, I'll put it on, sure. I'll put it on my bump, my car. So, and then, also University of Wyoming produced the legendary Thennis Dembo.
Indeed we did.
Yeah.
Sports Illustrated cover.
I know my Laramie hoops.
Yeah, it was one of those things, the same kind of deal where we would go play pickup at the Half Acre Gym, you know, just something to do after class. And, our team, the way that I survived, I'm kind of a shifty guard-like.
Okay.
Like, imagine if Mark Price was really slow and couldn't jump. That was my game. And I was left-handed, so I could get by for those first few pickup games until they figured out I was left-handed.
It was a lefty, yeah.
So I could just kind of go around guys because they'd all just defend your right instinctually.
Did you have that weird Mark Price, like Michael J. Fox cut haircut?
Well, the thing is, I have a big old head, so and this odd hairline, and it's it's a disaster. But I'm kind of out there, got the Lego Man head going on, and I've got the in between game, a lot of floaters, a lot of leaners, maybe a little Tony Parker style game.
Okay, mid range.
Yeah, so we're doing all right. Yeah. We're holding our own, and then some of the guys that don't necessarily play a whole lot for the college basketball team, they roll through, and they got the same kind of deal. We got winners, and it was these guys that we would yell and make fun of during.
Yeah, like the 11th man, like the guy, like the white guy.
The guy who would get in at the end of the game, and everybody would cheer when he made the shot.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, you're up 30 kind of kid. Yeah,
the victory cigar.
The victory, and he's 100 million times better. Even that kid is 100 million times better.
Crazy how good he was.
Yeah,
I mean he was like 6'8". He could dunk. He was posting up everybody. He was the best ball handler on the floor. He never got tired, and it blew our minds. You know, it was just one of those things where you look at him on the floor, and it looks like he looks like us. Out there compared to, the starting level, even the Mountain West Conference, they produce an NBA guy every once in a while. So,
Like they'll have their Jimmer Fredette every so often.
Yeah. This is, Andrew Bogut came out of Utah.
Bogey.
Andre Miller, they've
it's a good basketball card. It's always like a solid 3-4 bid league a lot of years.
Always pretty solid. And when I went when I went to school there, that was the year that we beat Dan Dickow's Gonzaga team.
Ooh.
It was that 6'11" matchup, and then we got trounced by Luke Walton's Arizona team.
That's right. I think that might have been the last year I ever picked Gonzaga in the tournament.
Yeah, because they got that 6 seed and they were furious because they were like 30-2.
Yeah.
And they were completely disappointed. We had a really good team and we beat them pretty soundly.
It wasn't like an upset, we were
better.
Yeah.
But so like those kids would come through playing these pickup games just to almost as like an ego boost, I kind of felt they kind of get their butts handed to them at practice or in the games, and they come to Half Acre and just wallop us.
Oh my God.
So that's always one thing that drew me to basketball was I always feel like they have the best athletes.
Yeah. You can see that like with the World Cup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I finally have come to terms that I hate soccer. I've tried so many times to like soccer.
You're just out.
And I'm just like, this sport's a snooze. Like, this is a total, this is a total snooze of a sport.
You're a basketball, you're a pro wrestling guy. So I just can't imagine soccer really getting
going. Yeah, well, like, I love basketball. I love baseball. I love wrestling. Wrestling's, like, I like wrestling. Like it's theater. That's not, it's athletic theater. Mm-hmm. I love baseball. I love basketball. I love tennis. I'm a huge tennis nerd. And, and I don't like football anymore. But what I decided, what's the difference, why I'm just, like, not going in on soccer, is the American sports are predicated on a constant payoff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, NBA, you have 24, something happens within every 24 seconds at least.
Yes.
You know, like, you make a shot, you miss a shot, you get fouled, something is always happening, mm-hmm. right, that leads to something.
Yes.
And baseball, as much as everyone says baseball is, you know, I know baseball, a bad baseball game can be awful to watch and sit through, but, you know, like a pitcher pitches the ball and a batter swings and hits it, doesn't, you know, miss it. There's a constant, like, payoff. There's, like, literally, you know, say, like, there's 300 pitches combined in a baseball game. That is 300 actions that result in something.
Yes.
And soccer, like, the payoff is every 4 or 5 minutes, someone will kick a ball that will likely go absolutely nowhere near the goal.
The you need those mini battles instead of those extended, almost like drawn out to the, like, the attention span can't handle that ebb and flow of a soccer game.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I freely admit, like, my attention span can't, and I played soccer. I mean, like, every American suburban kid, you know, you play soccer at this point, and, you know, I always had fun playing it. And I get, like, those guys, you know, are really, really good athletes, you know?
Yes.
And, I mean, World Cup guys are, like, world-class athletes, but if you just look at them and you're like, if you put, like, the, like, 11, you know, like, you take, like, the 15 best NBA players right now.
The guy we always bring up is Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
Like, the platonic ideal of the perfect athlete.
Yeah, exactly. And you take the best 15 American basketball players, and instead of playing basketball their whole lives, they play soccer their whole lives. Like, there's that sport's done. Like, it's America's winning every single year. Like, it's not even close. Like, that's just how much better NBA athletes are at everything than every other team sport athlete. You know,
it's like, crazy, because it's the height and coordination element that gets lost because they all look sort of the same when they're playing against each other. But if, like, you see these guys in person, I mean, just the size and speed at which they move and the grace.
You could personally go, like, a whole year without even seeing someone who's 6'9" at, like, the mall.
Just out and around. Yeah, it just
out
doesn't happen.
Out and around. So you think about, like, how few and far in between it is, you know, like, how rare it is to have that height. And then amongst that height to have athletic coordination.
Yes.
Like, it's insane to think, like, that there's enough people like that out there. You know, it's ridiculous. And
if you compute the amount of running that they do, I mean, it's 3 to 4 miles each game.
Yeah. And soccer's a lot more running. Soccer's, like, I think, like, some of the guys, like, run 12 to 15 miles a game, like midfielders.
It's nonstop
running. But I'm pretty sure, like, the NBA, the average NBA athlete, if they were focused on that type of endurance running, they would be perfectly fine at, you know, like Russell Westbrook, like, storming down the field, like Russell Westbrook boxing out for the, as a striker, getting, like, a long ball to him. Like, he would get every single one of those balls. Or, you might imagine if LeBron was crashing in for a header off a corner kick.
I like to imagine LeBron doing anything. LeBron's the tight end of the Browns. LeBron is the goalie. LeBron, or Kevin Durant, 6'11", just endless limbs, and they just gracefully glide like it's nothing.
Yeah. Kevin Garnett would be the greatest goalie.
Oh my goodness!
Because of what a psychopath he is to start with.
Yeah,
you know, and you have to have, like, that just kind of psychotic kind of attitude to be a goalie.
It's a whole other mentality.
Yeah, and he has that. So I have a U of A hoops question for you.
Yes, shoot.
I have long been of the opinion that former U of A hoops coach Lute Olson, you know Lute Olson.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we go way back.
Yeah, is he the most handsome white-haired man alive, or is Roger Sterling handsomer than him?
I'm going to say John Slattery is more classically handsome, while Lou mm-hmm. Olsen is maybe more comforting.
Grandfatherly?
Yes, that's the platonic ideal of what your grandfather would look like.
Yeah. That makes a ton of sense.
He's such a soothing presence. Even when he was like yelling from the sidelines, when people would come over to the huddle, they would just look at him, and it was like this look of, I don't want to disappoint Loot.
Yes. Yeah, I need to... Yeah, like he's like exactly like that. Like you're like the perfect grandfather type, or maybe like he's like you know, like you work for a company, and he's the hard driving but very fair boss.
And when his wife Bobby was still alive, mm-hmm. it was exactly what you would think. They would cook these team dinners and have the players over to the house. It was like Coach Taylor on Friday Night Lights, except for this high-level basketball program.
Except high-level basketball as opposed to big Texas football.
Yeah, he really was all of those things you imagine.
Yeah. Now, my favorite thing with Friday Night Lights is that, like my wife hates football. She absolutely despises football.
We'll walk into another room if it's on, kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh my God. She'll like kick and scream, like, and shit. Like, you know, like that's part of the reason I don't watch football anymore. Is just like, I mean, she won that argument.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I mean, I'm just like, I never really loved football that much to start with, but I'm like, yeah, it's like, I'd rather do stuff on Sunday than just sit around and watch, you know, some horrible NFL game.
You know, I'm getting close to that too. You know, football was always something that I watched to have a conversation with my dad. You know, it was like, this is filling in awkward silences.
Yeah. And I like knowing, what's going on in football.
The conversation, yeah.
For the conversation, especially in Philly, where it's just like I love Philadelphia, beyond all belief. Like, I don't think I would live anywhere else at this point. Like, right. I know I'm not going to live anywhere else at this point.
You're a Philly guy.
Yeah. You know, like, I've become a Philly guy. Like, I like Philly sports teams now. You know, I grew up a Yankees fan, but now like I'm a huge Phillies fan. And like when the Phillies had their big run from made the playoffs for 5 years in a row,
mm-hmm.
the amount of this city, Philadelphia, like a lot of time, like I was commuting from Philly to New York for work.
Uh-huh.
And which is like a major for people like out West. I don't know if you understand like what a big commitment and pain in the neck that is.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know,
yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like an hour and a half train ride every day.
And yeah, two ways.
Yeah, each way, you know. So I would, you know, it's like I grew up right outside New York. And, you know, like I was a big Yankees fan growing up. And, you know, and then like just at some point, you know, at some point in my life, like I hate, you know, I hate everything about New York. Like I hate being here. Like it's just a nightmare.
Right.
So I would come back on the train from work, on Amtrak, you know, and, you know, it'd be like one of those baseball days, just like beautiful baseball day.
Yes.
And you just get out and it'd be like 2009 or something when the Phillies were winning like 105 games that year. And everyone is outside watching a game. Like, you know, like everyone is, restaurants all over the city set up like outdoor TVs and everything. And it's just perfect here, you know?
Ingrained in the culture.
Yeah, and it's like, this is just absolutely the most perfect way that I want to spend my life is just in this situation, you know?
Right.
But when the Eagles are good as they are now,
yes,
you know, and the Phillies are terrible, it's like the exact opposite. It's like this all-encompassing obsession for Eagles football,
yeah.
But it's ugly. Like, it's just like this ugly feeling. Like, I can't, it's just... This like it's just like the brings out the worst kind. It's like if like the Phillies being good feels like your first high school crush who likes you back.
Sure,
you know,
okay. Yeah, it's a nice warm feeling inside that you can't.
A nice warm feeling, or it's like you know, like the Phillies being good felt like when you're at like you know like you'd be at like a you know concert, you know, some kind of like. You know, like you'd be at like a punk show in some basement or something like that, you know,
some beautiful communal feeling.
Yeah. And, you know, and you look across the room and there's like there's the girl selling vegan treats you know, and yes. you make eye contact and smile.
Sure.
Like that's what
okay.
Phillies, like Eagles love. It Eagles love feels like when you see your ex-girlfriend 9 months after she dumped you with her second, like her second boyfriend, because she dumped you for another guy.
Yeah, okay.
And now she dumped him for another guy. So you see the second boyfriend and you follow them at the mall.
Ooh. Yeah, that's not healthy.
Yeah, that's like Eagles love. That's what the Eagles feel like being around Philadelphia Eagles fans feels like.
Yeah.
Like they love it, but if something goes wrong, it's going to end up with innocents hurt.
So what's Sixer love? What's that?
It's Sixers love.
It's been a little while.
When they made the NBA Finals in
the Iverson team,
the Iverson year, the city was absolutely bonkers for the Sixers, like absolutely completely bonkers for the Sixers.
And you could never come up with a better pairing of athlete and city.
I have so many Iverson around town stories. It's like ridiculous, but you could not pair that better. And it was just this like ridiculous love affair here. Everyone had like Sixers banners in their cars and flags. Like, and it was as intense as the Phillies World Series was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it might have even been bigger, just because of just Iverson's like, you know, like the Sixers had like really good, like the Phillies have really good players, but they don't have like someone who like Iverson's one of the most iconic athletes of the century.
A transcendent personality.
Transcendent personality, you know? Exactly. That's the way to put it. But since the Sixers, as soon as they're not good, everyone just stops caring about them.
Okay.
But Philly is a huge basketball city, and yes. that's the reason why is there's six Division I basketball teams in Philly.
Yes.
And you know, Villanova is right outside the city. So there's five in the city, and Villanova is like 3 minutes outside of the city, you know?
And they definitely count.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, because they're the best one.
Yes.
You know, like they're you know, they've been in the Final Four, and they've won the championship in the, you know, 85 and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's also like a big like cult following of high school basketball here.
Right. Yes.
You know, like so Penn's Arena is the Palestra.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like 1902 or something like that. It's the second oldest gym in the country. The oldest is Fordham's.
Okay.
And it's just this awesome, awesome venue. It's 7,000, 8,000 seats. It's just the perfect place to watch basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Just and so what we have in Philly, it's called the Big Five.
Right.
And that's all of the city schools but Drexel. Okay. For some reason, never was included in this.
Poor Drexel.
Yeah. So I went to LaSalle, and I'm like obsessed with LaSalle basketball.
Okay.
So if LaSalle, you know, a lot of they don't do it as much as they used to, like back in the 60s. But when the city teams play each other, they try and play the game at the Palestra. So like if like St. Joe's LaSalle played Temple this year.
Okay.
And we played them at the Palestra.
Sure.
And, you know, it's sold out. It's like 50-50. Like the fan, they sell the tickets. You know, 50% go to one side, 50% go to the other. And it's just the absolute best, like, atmosphere.
It's this and, marriage of town and college and arena and the history and, yeah.
Exactly. You know, and, like, you know, I know a lot of, like, NBA fans hate college basketball. And a lot of college fans hate NBA. But I'm like, it's basketball. Who cares? Like, and obviously, college basketball is not as good as professional basketball, but that doesn't make it any less like fun, you know?
No, I just see them as two completely different things.
Yeah, they're like almost completely different sports, you know, in a way.
I feel like the shot clock makes them, yeah. Even if you took away like the whole fan tradition, paid, yeah. non-paid thing, the shot yeah. clock in and of itself makes it a completely different game.
Yeah, that 11 seconds really makes it a total difference because... You do the math over the course of a 40-minute game, right?
Yes.
Like,
and so many possessions.
So many. That means so many like less possessions than you would have in an NBA game, which means you can do so much more on, you know, so much more strategy comes into play.
It's a coach-driven game as opposed yeah. to a player-driven game.
Exactly. You know, and not that there aren't fantastic coaches in the NBA. Because Greg Popovich is obviously, he's the best coach in American sports.
Yeah, and it's a different kind of coaching.
Yeah.
where it's less XO play calling specific in terms of where it's more big picture management, you know.
Yeah.
Look, you know, there's just it's a whole other thing.
Yeah. But like even like the high school, like a big high school game here, like one of the big teams here is Roman Catholics, always like they're one of the big Catholic schools in town.
Yeah.
And if they have like a big game, say against Chester, who you may know because that's where Rondae Jefferson went to high school.
Yes, yes, yes.
They'll sell out like the Palestra.
That's
like
awesome.
a high school game will sell out like 8,000 people.
Yeah, that doesn't happen here.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, Tucson, I mean, Arizona, they don't do that here. There's certain cities where that happens. New York, you know, Philly, obviously, you know, it's just part of the culture.
Yeah, it's just ingrained. It's just really, really ingrained in here and everything, you know. But I went to I was going to, so I do some writing here and there for the classical.
Yes, 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 yes.
And I was going to, I never got around to finishing the article just because, you know, life got in the way. Mm. But I was going to do an article about Chester High School's basketball team.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, because they are, like that's, that high school is the, arguably the worst high school in the country. Like, you can really make, that school system is arguably the worst school system in the country. You can really make a very, very legitimate claim at that title, illustrious title. It's been taken over by the state like six times.
Oh,
it got so bad that the Board of Education president got into a fist fight with a teacher in the middle of the hallway.
Oh, my God.
But they are almost always the best public high school basketball team in the country.
Wow.
They almost always win the public division of Pennsylvania. If not, they're always very, very close. And it's hard. It's that ebb and flow is really, really hard, especially in a public, you know, public town. But they just like they start playing high level. They start playing super competitive basketball at the age of three in their youth leagues.
Oh, man.
And if you show if you're any good at all. They just put you in like this, like essentially like a witness protection program.
Kind of that Derrick Rose situation.
Yeah, exactly. Like you get put in like classes, like just with other athletes, the other basketball players, and sequestered from the rest of the city in a lot of ways.
Pre AAU.
Yeah, exactly. And because the city, I mean, it's like every inner, it's like The Wire. It's like every inner city ill you can think of happens there.
Hmm.
I mean, it's just, you get off the highway and you'll be you'll be in an open air drug market if you have to like turn around off I-95 through Chester kind of thing.
Man.
So, you know, it's like, so it's just kind of like if you either play basketball and you hopefully are good enough at basketball or you're just kind of like left out of the city.
And that gives that basketball such an immediacy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's insane. Like their following they get, like they'll have, like if they have a big game against like they bring like St. Anthony's down for Jersey City or somewhere, like they have to play at a college arena because of how many people will go.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that's where Rondae's from.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays with an edge here. You know, there's a definite difference between, you can tell when a kid's a West Coast kid and an East Coast kid.
Yeah, you definitely 100% can see that in basketball. Like, I mean, it's really bad to see. There's so much truth to that. And the only like West Coast teams, like college teams, that seem tough to me. Like St. Mary's is tough. They're tough out.
Yeah.
You know, but that's because half the team is from Australia.
Right.
You know?
It's a different kind of kid, yeah.
Yeah. Or like BYU will have like a tough team, but that's because they all went on that Mormon mission for 2 years.
Yeah, they're 24.
So they're like 24-year-old men playing against 18-year-olds, you know?
Yep.
But Arizona gets tough kids because Sean Miller's an East Coast guy.
Yes.
So I think he values
Book
that.
Richardson, you know, they have ties. They have, you know, like Kevin Parham when he was here. I mean, nobody played harder than Kevin Parham. And you can just definitely tell the way that Rondae plays. He's going to make it. He's going to be an NBA player. And he's not going to start this year, probably. He's probably going to be the sixth man. That's the kind of team Arizona's going to have this year.
Yeah. Yeah. They are I think they're going to be really, really good. I saw Sean Miller's Xavier teams a lot.
Yeah.
And cause, my LaSalle team played Xavier. I played them until Xavier went to the Big East.
Sure.
And that guy is coaches teams that just want to like gut your throat.
Now, they play so hard.
Yeah. Like they don't back down or anything, you know. Like,
I remember when Arizona got him, because there was that like year and a half stretch between Lute Olson and Sean Miller where it was I don't know where this program's heading. Because
who was even their coach?
Well, what happened was we had Kevin O'Neill.
Oh yeah, like, that's right.
You know, he's coached 11 Marquette. Different colleges and 11 different NBA teams. You know, he's just life. He's been all over the place. Yeah. So he held the ship, and then there was a year when there was no permanent head coach, Russ Pennell, who now coaches at Grand Canyon University, one of those for-profit colleges.
It's the only for-profit college in Division One.
He's their coach. So he coached the team here 1 year, and then there was that protracted search where they were like, "Are we going to hire Tim Floyd?" Like Tim Floyd was going to be the Arizona basketball coach. And it was like this whole thing where one website like KTAR out of Phoenix said, "Done deal, Tim Floyd coming to Arizona." I was like, not happening.
No. Yeah.
And so they reopened the search, and Sean Miller came to save the day. And look where they're at now. Back to top five every year. Top five recruiting class. Just awesome. People are so excited. When the team is good, everyone is just in such a noticeably better mood here.
Yeah. And it seems like U of A. Right. So tell me if like my version of what U of A is like in my brain is like it'll be like January. It'll be like the beginning of winter of the spring semester, and out in the Northeast, it's like be like 20 degrees with freezing rain for a month at a time, you know?
Yeah, right.
U of A will be like 75, 80 degrees, no humidity, no clouds anywhere in sight. Just a never-ending assembly line of girls who could be models everywhere you go, and I can imagine just like a good basketball team just makes that. So, and I would also imagine like a crazy party school.
All of the above is true, except it's a little chillier. It's only about 65.
Okay, all right. So you have to wear a hoodie. Even better.
You have to wear sleeves.
Even better.
Yeah, it's all right.
You know, like Rutgers. Like my brother went to Rutgers. It's like not like that at all. Like people just kind of go to Rutgers and like, all right, whatever.
Everybody kind of minds their own business.
Yeah, like everyone kind of hates it.
Like, and they have a weird situation with their athletic director, and there's always those weird hazing stories that come out of there. And...
Yeah, it's really weird and everything. Yeah, like I mean, because they weren't even good at sports until like a couple years ago.
Yeah,
and they spent so much money to finally get a good football team that like half the campus like revolted against it.
Yes.
And then the other thing about Rutgers is that it's actually six colleges.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like six colleges. It's like Rutgers College, Livingston College, which is where like my friends went, Douglas College, and there's like a couple of Cook College, Mason Gross, and they're not like they're all like their own unique campuses, and they're not connected.
Wow.
So like the football stadium's in Piscataway, but almost everyone lives in the city of New Brunswick.
Sure, yeah.
So, and like New Brunswick is like where like Gaslight Anthem is from. Mm-hmm. Like they have like kind of like a music scene, kind of thing. But to get to where like the sports are, you have to like drive. Like it's like a huge effort.
It's a whole ordeal. It's a to-do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you could literally you can. You know, like you might not ever step foot on like 80% of the school. You know, like if you go to like one, if all your class are at one of the campuses, like you could take a class at the other campus, but like you usually don't or whatever. It's like the worst place. I hate
that
place.
So weird.
Too. Yeah. Cause I lived there. Like I lived in New Brunswick on and off for a while, like when my friends and my brother were all living there. And it's just like it's just like, you just go there and just like my brother's apartment got broken into weekly. Like one of his roommates would buy a PlayStation and be gone the next week.
Ugh.
Like the door would be kicked in. Like it was just the worst place.
This puts his cable access show into such perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, you could tell. But I, when I was living with him, I made one of the all time great prank phone calls.
Well, let's hear it.
So there was this, I bit it from my friend Sean. He's probably going to listen to this. So So I have to give Sean the credit because he came up with the idea, but he never executed it. So there is a sports call-in show on this weird TV channel that they got in New Brunswick. And like the channel's from like Long Island or like Westchester County or something.
Okay.
And do you remember when Bobby Valentine was manager of the Mets?
Oh, yeah. Unforgettable.
And he wore that fake mustache.
The best.
Right? So this was like right when that happened because the host was like railing about Bobby Valentine and his Groucho Marx disguise.
Yes.
Right? Just, so he's just like talking.
Legitimately insane thing that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite weirdo things ever. Bobby Valentine wearing disguise after he got thrown out of a game. So I called in and he's like, you know, Greg from New Brunswick. So like, yeah, you know, like, I appreciate what Bobby V's trying to do. You know, he's just trying to keep things loose. He's just trying to keep, oh my God, there's a man in my house. There's a man in my house. I don't know who he is. I need help. And then I hung up the phone abruptly. I stumbled on the phone, you know, like that multiple right. hang up
yeah.
to sell it. So
it's the details. If you don't get those details, it ruins the whole thing.
So the host is like, Greg from New Brunswick coming up with a cockamamie tale of a home invasion to get out debating Bobby Valentine and the Mets with me.
Oh my God. Like that's what there was no empathy for something that might have horrendously gone wrong.
Yeah. And like, I didn't have time to tape it cause it was like a real spur of the moment kind of thing, but right. I didn't like break, you know?
Yeah.
Like I used to call in, I put this on your Facebook page about like the talk show, like
yes.
right wing talk shows in Philly we used to get on all the time. And I forget what I was trying to say once on the show. Like I was trying to do the same thing where I was like talking about, you know, like they're talking about like Bill Clinton or whatever, you know, and I was just trying to, you know, say, you're totally right about Bill Clinton. He's wrong for America. And I'm going to steal a car and drive into a ShopRite. Kind of something like that. Right. Something dumb. But the host caught me because I kind of broke.
Oh.
And so then you just hear her like afterwards. She was like gloating. She's like, you can't get past me, Greg. You can't get past me, Greg.
Well, speaking of phone calls, could you tell me your favorite, maybe your most memorable call into The Best Show? Something that sticks out in your head as the Gregulator?
Well, probably the one everyone knows the most is my like quote unquote heel call.
The heel turn.
Like probably, I mean, that one stands out. That one stands out the absolute most. And that's the one like people bring up to me, like Best Show people will bring up to talk to me about.
Yeah.
Because like I kind of, what's kind of funny is like when I first started calling in, people hated me.
And well, people reacted to you in a strong way.
No, people hated me. You can just flat say people hated me. Like yeah,
I thought you brought something to the show. I was always a fan of when you called in, even before we got to know each other.
So a lot of people just hated me, which was great and everything because there was like the protege race.
Yes,
but a lot of people like were for Geneva,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of like threw me off. Like I didn't quite know how to like I didn't know what I was doing, and I wasn't in the community, right? Like. I didn't like have any Best Show. Like I followed Tom on Twitter, you know, and like a couple other people, but I wasn't like active tweeting during the show or anything.
Yeah. You weren't like, on the board or any of that.
No, I was not on the board of directors. No, I wasn't on the Friends of Tom message board, until right about when I was about to start calling.
Okay.
Right. And I started calling cause Tom just mentioned me on the radio show one day, like randomly, like I didn't know who he was. Right. A lot of people think it's because like he's friends with my brother.
Sure.
But he didn't know my brother at the time. Like they didn't become friends until like after like years later.
Right.
So like they didn't. I mean, like they legit like my brother was a huge fan and Tom was a fan of my brother. But their paths never crossed.
Right.
So
the timeline's kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So like, I actually met Tom before my brother met Tom.
Mm-hmm.
But. You know, like, and now they're really good friends and they've like done like a lot of work together, like a bunch of different projects together and stuff.
Right.
Which is awesome. But, so I just started calling in and like, I didn't quite know how to play it, you know? So since people hated me, I just decided, you know, like, I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna, really, really like just do that because it's like a whole wrestling thing.
Right. It's, like, you're gonna lean into it.
Yeah. Like, that's like what, like, The Rock did. Yeah, like when The Rock came up, he was a baby face. He was a good guy and he was terrible at it. So he just gave the fan, like he just became what he just became a bad guy.
He did what he was good at.
Yeah, so I just came up with that, and I used to work right by Daniel Ralston.
Okay.
Who does he used to do Low Times with Tom and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So Daniel thought it was a really good idea too, and kind of tweaked it, helped me tweak it a little bit.
Okay.
So then, I had this, I was planning on doing it for a few weeks in a row. But 1 week I had something to do, I couldn't listen live. And then the next week I couldn't get through for, so there was a guest on or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So I finally was able to get through. And, the response I got was really, really a lot way better than I could have imagined it got. And, but the trick, what I discovered after that is what I did was I didn't call that much afterwards. I only called three or four more times after that.
It's true.
So it's just what I realized is I also really, really liked, my battle with Mithimine.
Oh my God. Yes. The best.
Yeah, they were pretty great. They challenged me to a game of basketball.
I remember this. Yeah.
Zach from Mithimine challenged me to a game of basketball. And I kept plugging it when I used to do a Holding Court podcast with my buddy Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
I kept plugging an episode. I'm gonna tell you whether I accept the challenge or not this episode. So you have to listen in. I'm not gonna tell you on Twitter, Zach.
Like a total pro.
Yeah, so then I did the episode. Me and Aaron did the episode. And Aaron, every now and then, Greg, what's the answer? I'm like, well, we're going to wait until the end of the episode. So then we get to the end of Holding Court. I'm like, Aaron, the answer is, and then we cut out. Like, we did the Sopranos ending.
Okay.
So you didn't hear me. You didn't hear my answer. So I just totally wasted that guy's time.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy was the worst. Zach.
Well, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? Greg's a good dude. Thanks so much for coming on. You can follow him on Twitter at Holding Court Pod. And I just want to add that I don't agree with him about soccer. I really like soccer. Shh. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Side Streets Pod, or you could follow me at NProvenice. We're on Tumblr, sidestreetspodcast.tumblr.com, and we're also on iTunes. Please visit us on iTunes and leave me a 5-star rating. And while you're there, why not write us a nice little review? I would really appreciate it. This week's episode is sponsored by Not All Women, the brand new podcast from Sarah Sahim and Callie Rasmussen, former guests of this podcast, current friends of mine. Not All Women is an intersectional feminist podcast exploring womanhood in the 21st century and celebrating, I'm not going to say that, that's a swear, women from all walks of life. I cannot wait to hear this podcast. As I'm sure you're aware, there is a massive void for this kind of podcast with this kind of viewpoint and talking about these kinds of topics. I think Callie and Sarah are going to knock this thing completely out of the park, and I have some insider knowledge of some of these guests coming up, and it's going to blow your mind. You are not even ready for how good this podcast is going to be. Subscribe to it on iTunes, follow them on Twitter, at Not All Women Pod. Now, I mentioned earlier that I had a plan to try to infiltrate the Arizona Wildcats basketball team. So a couple of weeks ago, the ArizonaWildcats.com put out a call for people to submit to be their PA announcer. The person that announces the lineups and does the "Your Arizona Wildcats" kind of thing. And of course I was going to enter. Are you kidding me? I couldn't wait to put together a submission. So I submitted that last week, still waiting to hear back whether or not I get an in-person tryout. So I'm going to leave for you at the end of this podcast my submission to be the Arizona men's basketball PA announcer. I think it's pretty good. And if I don't at least get a callback, I'm going to be so mad. I'm going to be so mad. I have everything it would take to be a great public address announcer. Don't you think? You've been listening to the Side Streets Podcast. My name is Nick Provenis, and we're going to find something fun to do. Tucson, Arizona, on your feet! Make some noise for 13 Pac-12 championships, 4 Final Four appearances, the 1997 National Championship, and undefeated on this McHale Center floor last year. It is your Arizona Wildcats! Good evening and welcome to the McHale Center for tonight's game between the Stanford Cardinal and your Arizona Wildcats. Ladies and gentlemen, we now ask that you please turn and face the flag as we honor America with the singing of our national anthem. Here to sing tonight is the UA Symphonic Choir. And now, Crest Insurance presents the starting lineup for your Arizona Wildcats. At forward, a 6'6" freshman out of Fullerton, California, number 5, Stanley Johnson. At forward, a 6'7" sophomore from Chester, Pennsylvania, number 23, Rondé Hollis Jefferson. At forward, a 6'8" junior from San Francisco, California, number 21, Brandon Ashley. At center, a 7-foot junior from Claremont, New Hampshire, number 35, Caleb Tarzewski. At guard, a 6'1" senior from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, number 4, T.J. McConnell. And at guard, a 6'3" junior from West Covina, California, number 1, Gabe York. Today's starting lineups are presented by Crest Insurance. Crest Insurance, Arizona's leading independent insurance agency. The head coach of the Wildcats is Sean Miller, and he's assisted by Joe Pasternak, Book Richardson, and Damon Stoudemire. It's time for the Jimmy John's Freaky Fast delivery of the game. Get on your feet and wave your arms for 2 rows to win a free Jimmy John's sandwich today. That's right, 2 rows get free Jimmy John's today, so make some noise! Brought to you by Jimmy John's Freaky Fast Delivery.